Fake Birds and Real Holidays. A Stargate Atlantis fic by X-Parrot. Read by Calicaria. Summary. The team descends on the Miller household. No turkeys were harmed in the making of this story, much to Rodney and Ronan's disappointment. Notes. Written for SJ Flashfic's Family Challenge. Set post-season 4, but written before season 5 debuted, so contains uncanonical speculation about Taylor's baby that was, fortunately, later jossed. The Jeannie and Taylor friendship here was strongly influenced by Scholio's wonderful postcards to Jeannie, which this reader highly recommends. So this day, Taylor asked from the seat behind John, is called Thanksgiving? Yeah, John said, but not real Thanksgiving. That's next month. You mean American Thanksgiving is next month, Rodney said. Yeah, the real one, not the ripoff. Monday? You guys couldn't even get the day right? Canadian Thanksgiving might borrow certain traditions from the American holiday, but our first celebration actually predated. As Rodney ramped up, John shared a grin of struck gold with Ronan. It wasn't often that a cheap shot could prick Rodney's nationalistic pride. Usually he'd just roll his eyes and point out that from Pegasus one couldn't even see Sol, much less individual nation-states on a single planet orbiting it. But Rodney had been so tense all the way here that anything could set him off. Calmed by Taylor's quiet inquiries, he was running out of steam by the time John turned the rental SUV around the corner onto the correct street, until Ronan looked over his shoulder to the back seat to ask,
"So, Canadian, you're the guys to the south with the stupid plant as chieftain?"
"What?" Rodney screeched. "Haven't you learned anything from those hockey movies?" Which kept him going all the way through pulling into the driveway and piling out of the car, and to the bottom porch step. He hesitated an instant before setting foot on it. Then, tenaciously bracing his shoulders like he had the first few times he walked through the Stargate, climbed up and rang the doorbell. A squeal and pounding footsteps gave warning, a second before the door flew open and a blue and blonde blur threw itself at Rodney's chest, screaming, "Uncle Murr!"
"Gah!"
Rodney protested, barely catching his niece in time, and would have gone over backwards off the porch if Ronan on the step below hadn't caught him by the shoulders. "So was the plane fun? Is Atlantis still pretty? And did you get carsick? Mommy said you used to get carsick. And does the ocean ever freeze solid so you can skate across it? And what'd you get me as a present this time? Can I have it now, please, 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 please?"
"She's definitely a McKay," John remarked. "No need to stop to breathe. Hey, Munchkin!"
As Madison merrily shrieked, "Uncle John!" and launched off Rodney to land in John's arms. "Murr," Jeannie said, appearing in the doorway with an apron over her skirt and her hands white with flour. "I was hoping that was you. You're late."
"Shepherd can't follow Google Maps," Rodney said,
and then at a delicate throat clearing from Taylor, such as she might make before he mortally insulted and or got himself engaged to an alien priestess, he said,
Hi, Jeannie. Happy holidays. We're here?
Jeannie beamed and gave him a hug that left powdery white handprints on his jacket, then turned her bright smile onto the rest of them. "John, Ronan, hi. Taylor, it's wonderful to see you again. Come on in, all of you. Can I get you anything to drink? Caleb's out picking out the last ingredients for tomorrow's main course. He should be back any time." Rodney winced as he hefted his backpack and led the way inside.
"Not tofurkey."
"Don't be an idiot." Jeannie smacked her brother's arm.
"I promised you no, right?"
Rodney perked up.
"You mean a bird? Formerly feathered? Because when I was telling Ronan about the holiday, I think he might have gotten a few understandable expectations of an actual honest-to-God meat."
Jeannie grimaced.
"Ew, no, we're having lasagna."
Rodney turned despairing eyes on John.
"Okay, fine," he sighed. "Maybe we can do a real Thanksgiving next month."
"Yes, I got your email, but you don't have to,"
Rodney had said despairingly. Really, don't feel obligated. Everybody will understand. The webcam video had been jerky and grainy, coming as it was over country lines and an intergalactic wormhole, but Jeannie's frown had been clear. No, Murr, I want to do this. Since the IOA has all of you on mandatory leave anyway, come! You won't have to find a hotel. We can put everybody up for a couple of days. It'll be fun. But you don't want to see me? Or your own niece? Because she can't wait to see her Uncle Meredith. It's not that. It wasn't either, John had known. Really, in his own way, Rodney had been looking forward to the holiday. It was just that a guy got used to having a home in a different galaxy from the place he came from. John hadn't totally realized it, the first time Jeannie had come to Atlantis. How disturbing it could be. He'd tried to sympathize with Rodney's anxiety, but he hadn't really empathized. Not until his dad had died, those few months back. Because, yeah, there was weird in the Pegasus, oh my god, I'm turning into a giant bug way. And there was weird standing on the lawn of the old estate and watching a man from another galaxy scarf hors d'oeuvres at your father's funeral. Ronan Dex never looked so alien as when he was awkwardly dolled up in Earth clothes. And then there was sitting in Jeannie McKay Miller's kitchen, drinking Coke while Taylor kneaded bread and Ronan stirred steaming cinnamon apple pie filling on the stove in a pastel check apron. And, yeah, John caught why Rodney was looking a little shell-shocked and gray around the edges. Some families you were born to, and some families you found, and the intersection had to be disorienting. The Coke was cold and fizzy, and the kitchen was warm and yellow gold, and smelled like the baker's corner of heaven, and he hadn't seen Taylor smile like this in way too long. Still, John couldn't help but be kind of grateful that Dave wasn't likely to invite him over for Thanksgiving any time soon. Madison fell in love with Taylor. After patiently letting her uncle finish a restorative cup of coffee, Maddie had claimed her gift. Despite Rodney's fears about the hyperkinetic demands of today's media-saturated youth, when she opened the box and saw the little hand-carved whistle, her eyes went round, and John was sure not even a PS3 could have evoked her breathless, "Oh, wow!" Out of consideration for her parents, the whistle was muted, and its woody, mellow tone hopefully wouldn't induce insanity in adults until long after they were back in Pegasus. Rodney showed Madison how to change the pitch by sliding her fingers along the groove, and within minutes she was managing a credible rendition of Mary Had a Little Lamb, while Rodney smirked the proud smirk of an uncle whose niece's genius genes were not overly diluted by an English major's contribution. "Where'd you get it?" Madison wanted to know, snuggled up against Rodney on the couch with her legs curled under her, while John flipped through the magazines on the coffee table. Rodney pointed back at the kitchen. "It's an Athosian whistle. Taylor's an Athosian, originally from Athos." John coughed. Rodney rolled his eyes in eloquent dismissal of the global significance of top-secret classifications. "And they learned to carve these as children. The kids make them for their friends. This whistle was given to Taylor when she was a little girl, like you, and then she gave it to me to give to you." And not just because Rodney had spent two missions fretting non-stop about child-appropriate presents, John didn't think, though he wouldn't swear to it. Madison stood up on the couch to peer over the back at Taylor, in the kitchen in conversation with her mother. They'd been introduced when they first came in, after John had given her the requisite airplane ride and Ronan had spun her upside down. "This is Taylor," Rodney had told his niece. "Hello," Madison had solemnly said, and Taylor had said, "Hello," just as solemnly back. Madison had stared up at her without another word, and stared again now for a good minute, before she tugged on Rodney's sleeve and informed her uncle. "Taylor is very beautiful."
"Yes, isn't she?"
Rodney said absently, paging through a recent issue of McLean's, and then, looking up as his sister and his teammate came into the living room,
"Taylor is a very, don't kill me?" I perhaps will not, Rodney, Taylor said evenly.
Maybe just a little maiming, Jeannie said, and then they looked at each other and giggled, a sound which shook John to the core. He'd seen Taylor after 4 cups of Rios wine, and she still didn't giggle. What had they been talking about in the kitchen just now? He'd have to check with Ronan. Rodney was looking equally terrified, but Madison just frowned.
Thank you for the whistle. You're very, very beautiful, she told Taylor. Mommy, am I going to be that beautiful when I grow up?
Jeannie glanced at Taylor, and the swift progression of understanding across Rodney's sister's face told John at least part of what they'd been discussing. Taylor's own expression was set in the mask John had gotten too used to in the last couple months. But then, before Jeannie could intervene, it melted, and Taylor smiled at Madison, told her, I am sure you will be, as you should grow up to be as beautiful as your mother. After that, they were fast friends.
Caleb came back with the groceries and takeout Chinese. They actually make vegetarian wontons?
Rodney observed in dismay, shook hands with all of them, and asked how the chartered flight had been. He was quietly civil to Rodney all through dinner, sitting squeezed next to him at the too small table. And Rodney was reasonably quiet, which could almost pass for civil. Even when they started arguing the Jungian nature of string theory, their soft mutters lacked a personal edge, no worse than when Rodney butted heads with Zelenka, so John figured they must have worked things out already. John, meanwhile, entertained the rest of the table with a few of their more innocuous and less scary missions, while Ronan provided sound effects to make Madison squeal. In between giggles, she asked Taylor about her favorite Chinese dishes. After getting over the astonishment that Taylor had, in fact, never had takeout Chinese, the best efforts of Atlantis's commissary weren't quite up to par, Madison proceeded to teach her the name of every dish, pronounced with authentically lilting inflections. Her best friend in kindergarten is Allison Wong, Jeannie explained. Taylor dutifully recited every word back, picking up the accent with an ease that made John wonder about the Athosian language. He didn't know if it was tonal. Thanks to the magic of the Stargate, he'd never heard the real deal. The linguists on Atlantis would probably know. After they were done eating, John volunteered to stack the dishwasher while Caleb put away leftovers. Thanks for coming, Caleb said as they were finishing up. It means a lot to Jeannie to have her brother over for the holidays, and Maddie's always thrilled when Rodney visits. I noticed, John said. One of these days he'd figure out what it was that made Rodney McKay so irresistible to small children, hopefully before Rodney figured it out and invented some kind of counteragent. Thanks for having us. Listen, I know Jeannie said you could make room, but I don't want to put you guys out. I booked a hotel in town for us. No way, Caleb said, shaking his head. Jeannie wouldn't hear of it. She's been looking forward to seeing all of you again. After the letters Taylor sends, she kind of thinks of you all as family. John didn't talk much with Rodney about his family, but he knew the McKay siblings were about all that were left, and they hadn't been on speaking terms for 4 years.
Making up for lost time?
Caleb smiled, a bit wryly.
Something like that. But you're not putting us out. We're happy to have you.
John suspected it was a measure of his devotion to his wife, that he sounded almost genuinely sincere about that.
Taylor's sleeping in my room, right? Madison wanted to know, come bedtime. Because my bed's big, and she's a girl, and the boys get their own room.
She's gonna have the couch right outside your bedroom, honey. Jeannie began, but Taylor said, Unless it's improper, I would not mind sharing. Well, it would give us an extra bed, but are you sure?
In winter on Athos, children would always sleep with their parents, Taylor assured her. For warmth and for comfort in the night's long dark. And Madison gleefully declared, My blankets are really warm, and I've got a nightlight, so it's not real dark, so you'll like it. And then latched her arms around Taylor's waist tight enough to make any argument moot anyway.
Which left her 3 teammates to figure out the guest room. We've got a sofa bed, Jeannie showed them, with a double mattress, but if you don't want to share, there's an air mattress for the floor, and I'm going to put blankets on the living room couch. Sorry we don't have better...
This is fine, John told her. Great, we're used to roughing it. This is 5-star, especially with the meal we've got coming tomorrow.
And he grinned at her, and elbowed Rodney in the ribs.
Right.
I suppose a carpeted floor is marginally better than sleeping bags in a tent, Rodney said, prodding the air mattress.
Ronan had no comment. He was opening the sofa bed, metal joints and springs creaking, then closing it again.
Clever. Yes, truly the pinnacle of Earth's technological advancement, Rodney said. So who gets it? We can decide when we go to bed, John said, which proved a strategic error. Or maybe just proof of Ronan's strategy skills. Because come 11, when the less child-friendly discussion had died down, and he and Rodney said their goodnights and staggered off to the guest room, it was, Rodney remarked with a jaw-cracking yawn, about 0600 Atlantis Standard Time, they found Ronan already occupying the sofa bed. He was flopped across it diagonally on his stomach, his toes only just hanging off the corner of the mattress, and his snores had reached the particular pitch that meant waking him would be a good way to get a knife in the eye. John and Rodney stared at their teammate for a long, exhausted moment. "Guess sharing the sofa bed's out," John said finally. "Rock, paper, scissors for the couch?"
John's scissors won him the couch, though listening to Rodney's muttered, "Where'd she get this? It feels like it's got better support than the prescription bedding in my quarters." As he sank into the air mattress, he wasn't sure if Rodney hadn't thrown the paper deliberately. The day dawned gray and rainy, but cozy inside the Miller house. Following breakfast, they all pitched in to put together the Thanksgiving feast.
"But I thought the holiday was on Monday," John asked. "Technically," Rodney said. "But we've always eaten on Sunday. Gives us Monday to digest." "So you don't even respect your own ripped-off holiday," John said triumphantly.
"Oh, shut up. At least we've kept a couple of our treaties with the indigenous populations."
"Tell me," Taylor asked Jeannie, "what is the source of conflict between your peoples?"
"Nothing in particular," Jeannie replied. "The rivalry is really more of a joke. Canada and the U.S. have the longest peaceful border in the world."
"Though we did burn down the White House," Rodney said.
"Just one house?"
Ronan asked.
"The White House is where the President lives," Rodney said. "The United States chieftain. It was a powerful symbolic gesture."
"It was almost 200 years ago," said John. "Sounds like Roland and Audra," Ronan said. "We and Audrans always made fun of the roll. Said they ate their Beeble Brick's tail first. Only actually battled a couple times, though."
"What, aren't you Cetadan?" Rodney asked.
"Yeah, in Audra of Cetada."
"In Audra and Roll were both Cetadan city-states," Talon said quietly.
"I thought your city was called Cetada," John said. "It is, now. Only name anyone bothers to remember."
Ronan shrugged.
"We're all Cetadan, anyways."
"Found the long tablecloth."
Caleb returned to the kitchen, brandishing the maroon linen, Madison trailing after with a pile of cloth napkins.
"Could one of you help me to get the leaves to extend the table? They're off in the garage."
"I will help," Taylor volunteered. Caleb blinked at her.
"They're oak, on the heavy side."
"I am sure I will manage," Taylor said primly. It wasn't really Caleb's fault. Taylor's long-sleeved blouse hit her arms.
"And you guys can help put together the lasagna," Jeannie said. "We're doing one cream and spinach, and one mushroom and tomato sauce. You know, white meat and red meat." And she winked.
Rodney gaped at her.
"Are you even listening to yourself?"
He looked around to make sure Caleb was gone, muttered, "We could just pop out and buy some fresh turkey to go on the side, for those who want it. Just a slice of breast with gravy. We can't get unprocessed poultry in Atlantis."
"Meredith,"
Jeannie whacked him on the knuckles with her wooden sauce spoon. Madison had made a turkey in kindergarten, pasting construction paper feathers over a brown paint handprint. It was hung on the refrigerator with dinosaur magnets.
"Take a good look,"
Rodney told Ronan mournfully.
"This may be the closest you get to an actual turkey."
It wasn't the intensity with which Ronan studied the picture, John thought, so much as how both he and Rodney seemed to be drooling.
"Down, you carnivores. We can pick up something for the flight tomorrow."
Rodney eyed him sourly. "Oh, like you don't like turkey more than any of us." "Well, if all of you..." Jeannie began, wavering.
"No," John said. "We're fine. The lasagna looks great. Right?"
And he gave Ronan his best commander's frown. No chance of getting it to work on Rodney, but Jeannie could handle her brother. And Ronan dropped his head, rumbled,
"Yeah, great."
Actually, once Jeannie had put Ronan to layering pasta, sauce, and three types of cheese in the casserole pan, he looked quite interested, meat or not, especially when he learned the dish hailed from the same culture that had produced pizza.
"So, these Italians, they're still around? Or just their food is?"
Jeannie frowned. "What do you mean, still around?"
"Yes," Rodney said over her. "Rome's not what it once was, but they haven't gotten wiped off the map yet. You know Dr. Galliano, the meteorologist? He's Italian." "Oh. Does he cook?"
"Hopefully better than he makes weather reports, though that wouldn't be saying much." "The table's all set," Madison caroled from the dining room. She flitted into the kitchen to perform an interpretive dance around the obstacle course of adult legs, to the tune of her Athosian whistle. "Let's eat!"
"Not yet, Maddie. The lasagna needs a couple of hours to bake," Jeannie said.
"What, hours?" Madison whined, in an impressive impersonation of her uncle denied a snack. "I know. Why don't you show Taylor and Uncle Murr your toy dinosaur collection?"
"Uncle Murr loves dinosaurs."
"When I was 7, Rodney squawked. "Paleontology's a soft science. It's practically a sponge. There's so much guesswork with the fossil record we've got. And besides, once you've been chased by a live first cousin to the Deinonychus, it loses its charm." "You've seen a real live Deinonychus?" Madison asked, her eyes expanded to the size of ping pong balls. "Did it have feathers?"
"Yes," Rodney said.
"Then you know they have feathers?"
"Maddie's up on all the latest research," Jeannie said. "She reads every article in Discover about dinosaurs."
"Not the most accurate source," Rodney harumphed. "But, I suppose, for a kindergartner." "Wait till you see all my dinosaurs," Madison said, taking his hand. And Rodney let himself be dragged off, with one last dirty look at his sister over his shoulder. Taylor, you have to see them too, even if they don't have the right feathers."
"A real dinosaur?" Caleb asked blankly. "Seriously? They're good eating," Ronan started to say, and then looked at his tomato paste stained hands and hid them behind his back. Sorry. John sighed. "Actually, that was the third or fourth one we've seen, at least."
The tablecloth was all but invisible under the plates and glasses and silverware and steaming pots and pans and dishes and bread baskets.
To heck with meat. John's mouth was watering.
They sat down at the table with Caleb at the head, Jeannie on one side of him and Madison on the other. Madison had demanded that Taylor have the seat of honor next to her, with Rodney and then John on the other side beside Jeannie, and Ronan at the other end. Jeannie gave Caleb the carving knife, or blunt lasagna serving knife, in this case. "You do the honors, dear."
Wait!
Madison stood up on her chair, waving her arms like she was refereeing, then reached down and grabbed her father's and Taylor's hands and her little one's.
"We have to do giving thanks," she pronounced. "Daddy first, because he's got the big knife."
"Very smart,"
Ronan approved, reaching across the table to take Taylor and John's hands. Once they were all joined, Caleb cleared his throat.
"Well, then, I give thanks for this meal, and my job, and my parents, and for my wonderful, beautiful, amazing wife, and the even more wonderful, beautiful, amazing daughter she gave us.
Jeannie smiled and said, "Thanks for my husband, who's pretty amazing himself, and our daughter. That's you, Maddie." And Madison grinned. "And also my brother, even though he's looking vaguely nauseous at the moment, for coming all this way, and his friends, too, to make this a real Thanksgiving feast." Madison nodded at her parents proudly. "And I'm giving thanks for Mommy, and Daddy, and Uncle Murr, and Uncle John, and Mr. Ronan, and Tayla, and my friend Allison, and Allison's Mommy and Daddy, and Miss Bullock at school, and Grandma and Grandpa, and Mrs. Connor, and Mrs. Connor's cat Alexis with half an ear, and..." Jeannie eventually hushed Madison during the catalog of her stuffed toy collection, and looked at her brother pointedly.
"Murr?"
"Ah, yes," Ronnie said. "Thanks for, everybody here, of course, and for certain ancient cities not sinking into the sea again, and for Schwarzschild being gloriously wrong about the tidal forces in and stability of wormholes, without which we never would have been able to come back here."
"Or, in fact, leave in the first place," John murmured.
"And for my sister for putting us up. And putting up with us. Me, especially." Rodney finished in a blurted mumble, but Jeannie squeezed his hand, smiling. "You, now," Madison prompted Tayla in a loud whisper, jiggling their clasped hands. Tayla smiled, Mona Lisa serene. "I am thankful to know that there is a world this beautiful where no wraith have come, and no wraith will ever come."
"Right," Ronan said. "And thanks for the food. It's always good to have it."
Then they were all looking at John. He coughed. Rodney's hand was sweating in his. Ronan's was even warmer, but dry and calloused.
"Thanks for..." John said. Good food and good company. And for..."
He glanced at Tayla, who nodded to him gently, and managed to get out.
"For family. The ones you find."
"And the ones you are born to," Tayla said, smiling at Rodney and his sister.
"Both," Rodney said. "Yeah. Let's eat?"
"Yes," Madison declared. Halfway through the meal, Jeannie remembered the bottle of wine Rodney had brought at John's insistence, and the siblings spent a few minutes in the kitchen digging up the corkscrew and appropriate glasses. It was a mild, sweet red, and Ronan wrinkled his nose at his glass disparagingly, but Tayla asked if they might bring some back to the Athosians. Caleb let Madison take a small sip from his glass, but she spat it out and stuck out her tongue.
"That's gone bad," she decided, went to the kitchen, and brought back a carton of grape juice from the refrigerator. "Here, Tayla, you can give everybody this. It's still good."
She glowered at Ronan when he laughed. "Thank you, Madison. It is very thoughtful of you," Tayla said, and the little girl beamed like the sun coming out.
"So, this is the holiday?"
Ronan said finally, leaning back and pushing at his fourth plateful of lasagna with the side of his fork.
"Eating and drinking and talking?"
"Pretty much, yeah," John said.
"And there's football on real, American Thanksgiving."
Ronan leaned across the table to flick Rodney in the forehead.
"Can see why it's your favorite."
"It is much like the equinoxes were on Athos," Tayla said. "The harvest day and the rebirth day. For the harvest day we would all come together in the meeting tent to feast on the best of our crops and hunts until we were fat for the winter. Then, during the winter months, we would all be sure to put aside a bit of our best baking and smoked meat to share with one another for the rebirth day, reminding ourselves of the wonders of spring to come. And for both we would sing and dance, and play our whistles, such as yours, Madison."
"A lot of our Thanksgiving traditions came from European harvest festivals," Caleb remarked.
"So, really, this is the same holiday as yours, pretty much." "Minus the singing and dancing," Rodney said, and might have muttered,
Thank God. Under his breath after that.
It sounds fun, Madison said, eyes bright. Can I go, Mommy?
Maybe someday, sweetie. Jeannie looked down the table. What about your world, Ronan? She asked. Do you have harvest festivals? Or, oh, no, I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking. I didn't mean...
It's okay, Ronan said. We didn't have any harvest festival on Cetera, but we had feast day last day of every month. Big meal, like this, with family, or your lesson troop, or your squad.
Once a month? Rodney straightened up in his chair.
Really? Cetaten month. About 6 weeks. 10 to an annum. There was a different feast for every month.
And Ronan counted off on his fingers.
Fish, bird, crab, gourd.
Gourd?
Deer, bibblebrick. Like that.
So if it wasn't a harvest festival, Caleb asked, what were you celebrating?
The usual, Ronan said. Being alive, the Wraith not calling us yet.
No one had been talking over him anyway, and yet somehow the silence when Ronan closed his mouth seemed oppressively total, until Madison piped up.
What are Wraith? She pulled on Taylor's sleeve. You said that word too, Taylor. Are they bad?
Yes, Taylor said after barely an instant. Very bad. Then she opened her arms and drew Madison into her lap. The girl clambered onto her willingly, putting her arms around her back and snuggling in, and Taylor rested her cheek against her golden curls. But you will never have to know what they are, Madison.
Oh.
A true McKay, to never be content with ignorance. But she was Jeannie's daughter, too, enough to bite her tongue on her questions for the moment, sitting quietly and letting Taylor hold her close. After everyone had demolished a couple pies and a bowl of fresh whipped cream, Ronnie and Ronan were democratically elected to handle cleanup.
Be careful with those plates. My sister'll kill us if they get chipped. No, not there. You can't put that in the dishwasher. And not there either. Are you trying to knock over that stack before we even wash it? God, have you ever heard of a bowl in a china shop?
No. A what and a what?
That's... Never mind, just give me that.
Caleb got up and took Madison by the hand.
Now's a good time to call. Let's go talk to your grandparents, sweetie.
Are Grandma and Grandpa coming?
Not this time, Caleb told her. They're in New Brunswick with your aunts and uncles. We'll see them at Christmas, okay? But you can tell them you love them on the phone.
And Jeannie hauled Tail off to look at family albums, or something of the sort. After narrowly escaping KP duty, John prowled the living room, noting the new pictures of Rodney with Madison on his lap on the mantelpiece. There was also, to his surprise, a small framed snapshot of the four of his team. They were in a green field, Rodney's mouth open, and his arms captured mid-flail, Ronan grinning, Taylor rolling her eyes, John with shades on, standing between them. M4V382, John recognized, though the tall grasses and blue sky could be mistaken for a thousand different places on Earth. Lauren must have snapped the picture. John wondered if Rodney or Taylor had given it to Jeannie. A murmur of feminine voices came from the guest room. With a mind for blackmail material, Jeannie had once promised Baby Meredith pictures, but had yet to deliver. John sidled to the door. There were a couple albums on the floor, but Jeannie and Taylor weren't looking at them, sitting on the open sofa bed. Jeannie had one of the plaid cushions in her lap, was hugging it to her chest.
Murr had told me, before I got your letter, she was saying.
He emailed me whenever the gate opened, all the time you were... gone. I can't imagine what it was like, Taylor, but I'm so, so sorry.
Thank you,
Taylor said. Her face turned away, and her soft voice almost as toneless as Jeannie's was full of emotion.
What were you going to call him? Jeannie asked quietly. We do not name our children until their first birthday,
Taylor said. Oh no, I'm so sorry. No, do not be, Taylor told her. I was asked the same many times in Atlantis when I was before. Enough so that I had the thought to call him Tagan after my father, or else Arang after Canaan's. And then her voice went so soft John couldn't hear it anymore. But he saw the movement as she leaned into Jeannie, face pressed against Jeannie's shoulder, and her own shoulders shaking as Jeannie put her arms around them. John turned away, went back to the living room, and threw himself down on the couch. He flipped through the October issue of Popular Science without registering words or pictures, just the rustle of the pages, loud enough to cover any sound that might drift from the guest room's half-open door. Then he tossed the magazine aside, got up and followed the clanging clatter of pots, Rodney's strident rebukes, and Ronan's basso counterpoint into the kitchen. There were clean pans in the dish drainer, and a slippery layer of bubbles on the linoleum floor. Ronan's white shirt was soaked and clinging like a fashion model's, and Rodney's hair was plastered wetly to his head, frothy with soap bubbles. They were staring at one another in fierce, motionless silence when John entered, Rodney holding the sink spray nozzle like a pistol with the water running cold behind him, and Ronan grasping a damp towel twirled into a whip in both hands.
So, looks like you're doing great here. What can I do to help?
John asked, and got a soap-slimed dish rag to the face for his trouble.
It's the best movie ever, Madison said. It's got a witch and Hermione and Daddy become pigs, and the boy is a dragon, and she has to pull a bicycle out of a river in the bath.
Sounds like my last acid trip, Rodney said. You know, if I'd ever risk my brain actually dropping acid. Enzyme and or hallucination-induced concussions at 40,000 feet under. Point.
You've never seen Spirited Away? Jeannie asked. It's a lovely film.
Award-winning, Caleb offered. And it holds up surprisingly well on the 25th viewing. Rodney's expression made it clear what he thought of awards and recommendations granted by English majors and their Hollywood Academy kin, but he waved his hand.
Yes, if the little lady wants it, of course.
He set his open laptop on the couch arm as Madison scrambled to put the disc in the player. Then she nestled herself on the couch between him and Taylor, clutching the DVD case. Taylor studied it with interest. Feigned or true, John couldn't quite tell from his position on the armchair kitty-corner to the couch, and he was too comfortably ensconced to sit up and make sure. Her smile was real, anyway, as Madison pointed out important details to her. Caleb picked up the remote.
English or Japanese?
He called across the dining room, where Jeannie was portioning out the last of the wine across six glasses. Rodney looked up at the TV screen in alarm, then leaned over to get a look at the DVD case.
It's a cartoon!
Japanese anime, Jeannie corrected, unknowingly hitting the exact tone that Zelenka got during certain pre-movie night arguments.
It's Miyazaki's, John supplied,
having listened to more of those arguments than Rodney himself had, never mind that Rodney was usually participating in them.
He's Japan's Walt Disney, pretty much. Some of that anime is pretty cool,
Ronan remarked from where he was sprawled on the rug, leaning against the couch arm with his big hands laced comfortably over his stomach.
You would think so, Rodney said. Blood and explosions are cheap to draw. They can do plenty of them.
Not in this one, Jeannie said, coming over to put a half-full wine glass into John's hand and another into Taylor's. Give it a try. You might like it.
Fine, whatever. Put it on English, at least.
Caleb grimaced.
The English dub changes the script. The story's more subtle than the original.
But if it's in English, I don't have to watch. I won't miss any dialogue.
Besides, won't Madison find the subtitles hard to follow? Doesn't matter. She's got it memorized in both languages.
And so on. In the end, they went with the English track, as Ronan and Taylor's English reading skills weren't always equal to fast-paced subtitles. John hadn't remembered the title, but he had seen most of the movie before. One night in Atlantis, a year or two ago. Once the little girl was in the castle, he remembered the richly dreamy feel and the little black dust bunny scuttling around. He thought the bug-like things would have creeped him out as a kid. They kind of creeped him out now. But Madison squeaked and giggled at them like she wanted one for a pet. The movie was good, but John found himself more watching the people watching. Twilight had darkened to night outside the windows, and the only light came from the TV, Jeannie's family and his team awash in softening blues. Rodney's long lashes were limned in flickers from his laptop as he typed, catching up on email or research or whatever, a softly distracting tappity-tap. But he kept getting distracted by the adventures on screen, his fingers freezing mid-sentence over the keyboard as he gazed at the television for long scenes, before shaking his head and returning to his typing. Ronan watched with the intent, utterly silent absorption that he took in all films with. They'd learned a while back that if any cultural references ought to be explained, they'd need to pause to do it, because Ronan would never interrupt to ask questions, and would aim a death glare at anyone who dared use more than a voiceless whisper when a movie was playing. It did keep down the noise pollution at movie nights, anyway. The Atlanta screenings were the quietest John had ever attended. Rodney was the only exception. Not that Ronan didn't glare, but nothing shut Rodney up for long. And Taylor... John had never really managed to get Taylor into movies, any more than football. But she was watching now, with the same fascination as Madison, their eyes wide and shining. Under a knit afghan, they cuddled together, and Taylor gasped as Madison did, as the little girl on screen rode the rippling ribbon of a river dragon through the starry sky. She would have made such a fantastic mother. It wasn't the first time John had realized it, but it was the first time in a while that his heart didn't squeeze painfully at the thought that he could watch Taylor smile and not feel cold. The glow from the television was cool, liquid blue, but John, sunk into the armchair's paisley cushions, hadn't been this warm in a long time. John blinked when the blue shadows abruptly brightened to gold, sat up, and stifled a yawn behind his fist. White and black credits were rolling on the screen, and Caleb had turned on the lamp. "Anyone want a snack?" Jeannie offered. "There's the leftover Chinese, or I can make sandwiches." Rodney said, standing and stretching and wincing as his back popped. "Sandwiches sounds good." Ronan got up from the floor with the enviable grace of a big cat, a smooth, easy motion. He poked Rodney in the gut with one finger.
"Course you're still hungry. You'd turn into one of those pigs like that if you were in the spirit marketplace."
"So would you," Rodney muttered, slapping his hand away. "Or maybe not, as I'm reasonably sure it was only thinking adults who..." He was interrupted by Madison climbing off the couch and stamping her foot down right in front of Ronan's boots. "Mr. Ronan," she said, glaring all the long way up at his face, fists on her hips. "Don't be mean to Uncle Murr." Ronan stared back down at her, a little yellow-haired creature less than half his height. "Maddie, honey," Caleb said, getting up from the love seat in a scrambling hurry.
"Don't,"
Madison repeated. Ronan stared at her a motionless second longer, then nodded.
"Sorry,"
he said, and then reached down and swooped her up in one arm, using his free hand to tickle her belly.
"What? No, don't!"
Madison shrieked, squirreling and flailing and curling around Ronan's arm like a pill bug rolling itself up.
"No! No, stop!"
It would have been more convincing if she hadn't been giggling in hysterically high pitches as she struggled. Jeannie smiled fondly, shaking her head, until there was a flash of bared teeth.
"Madison Megan, no biting!"
"It's good,"
Ronan said,
handling his wiggling bundle with comfortable ease, and passing her from arm to arm before she could get a grip on him.
Any weapon she's got, good for her to use.
This is not fighting practice, Taylor said mildly.
It's for fun, you caveman, Rodney hissed.
Sure it is, Ronan said, grinning. Fighting's lots of fun.
From his grin, John was about 85% sure he was just kidding. The other 15% he didn't want to know, and suspected Jean and Caleb were better off also in ignorance.
Kids will be kids, Rodney said. Even 2 meter tall ones.
And he pulled his sister into the kitchen for sandwich making. Taylor and Caleb followed, leaving John hanging in the doorway to babysit, or at least make sure no chairs or lamps were overturned. When Ronan finally collapsed on the couch, Madison crashed half on top of him. They were both panting for breath and grinning. Madison soon fell away, though, and she drummed her heels on Ronan's thigh.
But don't you like Uncle Murr, Mr. Ronan?
Yeah, Ronan said.
But you're mean to him.
Yeah, Ronan said. But that's 'cause I like him.
Madison made a face.
That's weird.
No, Ronan said. Your mom and dad, they're mean to you sometimes, right? Like, they make you go to bed when you want to stay up. Or they won't let you eat nothing but candy.
Yeah,
Madison said slowly.
But they're not really mean, because they're doing it to take care of you.
Yeah,
Madison said, and her face cleared.
Oh, you're taking care of Uncle Murr? Like a daddy? Because you're taller?
No,
Ronan said.
Like being a teammate. Me and Taylor and Rodney and John, we're teammates, so we all take care of each other.
So you weren't being mean to him?
Yeah, your Uncle Murr, he eats a lot sometimes and doesn't exercise much. Maybe it's not good for him, with what we do. So that's why I say that.
Ronan looked thoughtful.
The arrow in his butt, though, that's just funny.
The what?
Ronan grinned.
Tell you later. Your mom and dad probably want me to wait until you're older.
A lot older,
Rodney said, right over John's shoulder, a plate of grilled cheese in hand. Like 90, maybe 100. His waspish tone was ordinary enough, though when John looked at him, Rodney had his head ducked, like he was embarrassed about the smile he couldn't seem to stop making. Madison fell asleep on the couch, with her head in Taylor's lap. John's last image before he wandered into the guest room to crash on the sofa bed, beating Ronan to it tonight, was Taylor's fingers carding through the girl's fine blonde hair, her lips curving in a gentle smile as she talked with Jeannie and Rodney. John awoke to sun on his face, a stripe shining through the gap between shade and window frame. He squinted into it dazedly, sat up. The mattress creaked under him, and Ronan, sacked out on the other side with one arm and his feet dangling off the mattress's edge, grumbled incoherently and rolled onto his back. Vacating the bed, before Ronan rolled over onto him, John ducked into the bathroom for a quick shower and shave, pulled on a sweatshirt over jeans, and wandered out into the kitchen.
You're up,
Jeannie said brightly. She was in a blue bathrobe over striped pajamas.
Good morning. I'll get the pancakes on for you. The batter's all made, but better to grill them fresh. Do you want eggs with them?
John said.
You'll want coffee first, Rodney said, appearing out of somewhere to thrust a steaming mug at John.
Meredith, have you been inducting innocent colonels into our worst vice?
Everyone on Atlantis runs on coffee, Rodney said. It's the city's lifeblood. Forget the ZPM. We wouldn't last a day without caffeine.
John sipped the coffee. No milk, a pinch of sugar. Rodney had the recipe down, and glanced at the clock over the stove, then blinked and rubbed his eyes.
The position of the hands didn't change. It's almost 10 in the morning?
Yeah, we all slept in. I've only been up 3 hours, Rodney said.
Wasn't it midnight when we crashed?
Too much food, a little wine, a good movie. That'll put anyone down for the night, Jeannie said. And I think you all needed it. She poured pancake batter onto the sizzling griddle in uneven circles, picked up the spatula. I've gotten Murr's emails and Taylor's letters, but what you guys have been talking about, especially the night before last... John furrowed his brow and drank more coffee, trying to remember, coming up mostly blank. He could remember sitting on the couch, listening to Rodney, talking himself sometimes, Taylor and Ronan joining in too. But after the plane flight and the drive that afternoon, he'd been tired enough that the whole conversation hadn't really registered.
It hasn't been an easy year for you, Jeannie said, staring down at the cooking pancakes.
You can say that again, Rodney said, more soft than sarcastic.
I'm glad you came, all of you.
Jeannie continued to watch the pancakes, like they might spontaneously burst into flame if she looked away for an instant.
I couldn't... Yesterday, before we ate, I couldn't say it in front of Maddie, but what I wanted to say was thank you for being here. Thank you for being able to come, for not being... After everything, for getting through it, for still being...
Wait, are you crying? Rodney sounded horrified, or terrified, or possibly both.
No, shut up! Jeannie smacked him in the shoulder with a spatula and scraped her palm across her eyes.
Murr, you're an asshole!
Ow! Rodney said, rubbing his shoulder. And, yeah, sorry.
He looked at John helplessly.
John cleared his throat.
Sorry about giving Madison that whistle. Hope you guys don't hate us for it in a week.
Oh, yeah, Ronnie said hurriedly. I better show you. There's a way you can block it from making sound. It won't damage it. It's pretty easy to fix if you know how, but if you need some quiet time, Taylor showed me how.
He wasn't ready for Jeannie to flip four of the pancakes and then turn around, all in one complicated motion, bury her face in his shoulder and sniffle loudly once. But Rodney was learning, because he got his arms around her before she could pull away, awkwardly patted her back, and said in a worried mumble,
It's okay. I love you?
Jeannie snorted a sort of chuckle, gulped, and drew back.
Love you too, even if you are an asshole.
She glanced at John, said,
sorry about that,
and then reached to grab a plate from the drainer and flip the pancakes onto it.
Here, the maple syrup's on the table already.
100% genuine syrup, Rodney informed him, full of 100% Canadian pride.
Caleb and Madison had taken Taylor down and across the border to Seattle for last-minute shopping, Jeannie explained as John ate. They'd agreed to meet them at the airfield at 4, in time to get their chartered plane to fly back to Colorado Springs.
Book shopping? Rodney suspiciously inquired. Electronics, maybe? Or music?
Clothes, I think, Jeannie said. Maybe shoes? Jewelry?
I don't know. Caleb's the one who likes to shop with Maddie.
And the McKay siblings shared a moment of shuddering regret for those loved ones fallen prey to the dread consumer drive. Ronan emerged from the guest room then, and John helped Jeannie whip up enough pancakes and scrambled eggs to satisfy him. After that, Jeannie turned on her computer to discuss the finer points of her latest mathematic proof with Rodney in person. Once that discussion had escalated to incomprehensible six-syllable words and polynomial strings, interspersed with the occasional, idiot, jerk, and, oh my god, how in a rational universe could you possibly be this far off? John swiped the basketball in the entry hall and went outside on the driveway with Ronan. Atlantis had a regulation court, but John didn't really go for the game proper, just shooting hoops.
and a game of horse never felt right indoors, even when you could smell the ocean. The rubber reverb of the ball bouncing on the pavement made him feel 13 again. Dave had been 2 inches shorter than him then, but he'd been stubborn enough to practice until he could make any shot John could manage, and then some. Ronan didn't need to practice. Between his height and his throwing skills, usually applied to pointy things, but more than adequate with anything else, he swished the ball through the net every time. After John lost 2 games in about 10 minutes, they switched to some basic one-on-one, which was really just an excuse to let Ronan more actively kick his ass. But hey, as long as he was happy. And he took care not to actually knock John down when he stole the ball. The sun was behind the clouds again, but it hadn't started raining yet. When they stopped, John pushed up his hoodie's sleeves and wiped sweat off his brow. Ronan wasn't even breathing hard. He'd gotten a better workout tickling Madison. John grinned, maybe a little wry, as he folded his legs and sat on the porch steps. Ronan leaned on the railing next to him, looking out across the street. John wondered what he saw. A plain, quiet, boring neighborhood. Green lawns and growing trees and snug, safe houses. Families living behind clapboard and shingles, with all their ordinary fears of mortgages and burglars, car accidents and cancer and getting laid off. He didn't know if Cetata had had suburbs. All he'd seen of the planet was the wreck of that one city, the barren streets and skeletons of empty buildings.
Taylor was right, Ronan said. Your world, it is beautiful. Don't know if I could really live here, but I like visiting.
Yeah, John said. Me too. They were all packed up, ready to go. Taylor had already taken her bag with her. John checked his watch. About 15 minutes should be enough time. It'd be too late to call by the time they got back tonight.
Mind if I use your phone? I'll pay for the long distance.
Go ahead, Jeannie said. And don't bother about the money. We've got a good plan. She hovered in the kitchen doorway for a moment, then nodded to him and closed the door. Cetadean feast day had been every 6 weeks, Ronan had said. Mid-October to the end of November. It worked out pretty well. Dialing America from Canada didn't take any extra numbers. The phone rang once, twice, 3 times before it was picked up.
Hello, Shepherd speaking.
Hey, Dave, John said.
It's John. I was just wondering what you were doing for Thanksgiving next month. Is there room at the table for a few more? Say, me and 3 civilian contractors?
The end. Thanks for listening.